This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
We are now at day three, and this is going to be a full day here on Sunday, September the 4th, 2022. And along with the full day, we're going to be starting off this morning, the Gospel Breakfast, I believe, at 8 o'clock. I'm going to be doing a live podcast with Jeanette Andrews starting at 9. Live meaning we're going to have a room full of people who will be in there seeing how the sausage is made, as I like to say. So this way they have some guests who will hear in the background over there, and that will be recorded in full, which will be broadcast at some later date. So this will not be part of the podcast you'll hear here today, but will be saved for a little bit later. But I thought since yesterday we left you after the stage contest, if you were a little confused as to what was going on there, I was the host of the stage contest, and as such, in between acts, I had different people who were coming up and who were my guests and giving us some content and kind of kept the show moving along in between the contestants' acts. So when you heard me introducing people, that was what that was all about towards the end of that. But I thought there was some tremendous content that we had with Rolando Santos and everybody else who you heard there from yesterday's episode. And that, one again, was with days one and two. And this episode will include day four, which will be tomorrow, Monday, because we just have a couple of lectures going on. So not a lot going on, so I'm combining those two. Having said all that, I thought we need to kind of catch up from what happened a little bit last night. And we're here at breakfast, and I've got someone who is in charge of the new Magic Academy, and also someone, if you haven't signed up for his lecture series online, you should. Please welcome my friend, J.D. Stewart. Hey, J.D.
Hey, Scott. Thank you for having me. I am deeply honored to be on this podcast.
Well, you're welcome. You had me as one of your guests, in fact, one of the lecturers one time on Sunday.
I did, and it was a great lecture. Thank you. If people haven't seen it, they need to join so they can see your lecture. It was well worth it.
Well, tell briefly before we get into what's happening with last night. So tell us about the New Magic Academy and what you actually do in your lecture series and how people get involved, et cetera.
Sure. The what we do is we provide lectures, free lectures, twice a month. And so that all you have to do is sign up. Mm-hmm. And so you can watch these lectures. We have people from all over the world, some of the best magicians in the world. You know, examples are Scott Wells. Mm-hmm. And Pop Hayden, David Regal. In fact, we're going to have Adam Wilbur here coming up.
Did you have J. Scott Berry?
Did not. No, okay. I need to get a hold of him. Yeah. In fact, J. Scott Berry, if you are listening, get a hold of me, please, because I'd like to do that. But yeah, because I'm a big fan of J. Scott Berry, big fan. You can come in, see the lectures for free. If you want to see the replay, you need to become a member. But members get access to all of the replays. And then also we have once a month what we call a VIP member event, where we go into a deep dive on a particular subject. And they go everywhere from business to, in fact, the last one I think was on ropes. Rubber bands. Even the last one was on rubber bands. So it's just a wide variety.
And you have a newsletter also.
I do have a newsletter. It's a magazine.
Sorry. It's like Vanish Magazine. It's huge.
It is. It's called Imagine. And I started that because I need to stretch myself a little more. It plays to none of my strengths and all my weaknesses.
So do you get what you expect when you order this? No. I've read it. It is good. It's got a lot of good content and everything. It's not like, you're learning quickly.
Yeah.
You're doing well.
And what I'm doing, the other thing you get is you get access to a library of over 250 books in there. And so what I do, I take articles of things that have been written long ago by some of the best magicians in the world, Houdini, Blackstone. These things are all out of copyright, so I can use them. And we copy them just exactly as they wrote them, as they published them, and put them in the magazine.
And so where do people sign up? How can they get involved?
All they have to do is go to newmagicacademy.com.
New Magic Academy, or just Magic?
Just New Magic Academy. newmagicacademy.com/lecture. And that signs you up so you get notifications on the lecture, and you'll automatically be getting the magazine as well.
Okay. Well, let's get into a little bit of what happened then yesterday after we finished with the contest, stage contest, yes. That's when we left you then hanging last evening, and then there were a couple lectures went on yesterday afternoon. Immediately after that, I think as you recall listening to that, Losander said he was going to be lecturing, and he did, and that was long about 1 o'clock. And did you hear his lecture, by the way?
I did. It was a great lecture. I've heard Losander lecture before, and he never disappoints. It's really good. He had a levitation for a glass or something of that nature, which I had not seen before.
Exquisite,
yeah. It was amazing. Of course, all the Losander stuff is amazing, and I just love it to death. So, yeah, it was a great lecture, very informative, and some great product as well.
Practical and commercial stuff.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. In fact, I haven't bought it yet, but I'm going to get that glass thing because I know how I can use that in my
I was show. One of the first people who bought that. In fact, I had suggested a name, Mike Amar, and I were working on that with Losander. My name's not involved with it and shouldn't be necessarily, but I was suggesting, I was one of the early people kind of figured out because they continue to work with different things to make this float. And I had suggested the name Crystal Air because it'd be like an airline, and because for wine glasses, you make wine glasses float, and it'd be Crystal Air. And Michael liked the name Exquisite, which I don't understand, but whatever. That's what it's called. The trick's called Exquisite. And it is exquisite, by the way. It's a great trick.
It is a great trick. It's a great trick. And I think your name has better marketing value than
Michael Mars. Yeah, thank you very much. You've been drinking early this morning, haven't you, over here? What's the deal? Is there some vodka in your orange juice? What's his deal? Following him, both of us missed this because I was involved as contest chairman for the stage or close-up contest, which went on later that afternoon. And that was Jusson Silvan, I believe, from Luxembourg.
Yes. I did not get to see that either. But I did talk to some people, and it was evidently heavily Pharaoh Shuffle-oriented. So
it was a lot. I mean, it was billed as being for any card and any number,
ACAN
kind of a thing.
Any card and any number, and other card magic.
And so I was looking forward to hearing that, but I was unable to do it because of my other duties that I had going on. So that kind of closed out the afternoon. Is that right?
Yeah. We had the close-up competition as well.
Well, yes. Yeah, which I thought was pretty strong. It's amazing. Yeah. We had so many contestants, both stage and close-up. We had 9 close-up contestants.
I counted 10.
Ten.
Yeah. And what I like about the close-up competition was it was a range of skill sets.
And ages.
And so, you know, like if you are wanting to get more flight time, and they'll say, well, I'm not good enough to be in a contest. Yes, you are. Because, you know, there's a range of skill sets in there. You don't have to win a contest to get value out of it.
People talk about flight time, getting out and working, particularly close-up guys, working in restaurants, cocktail parties, whatever you can to try to get some work. If you're doing some stand-up or stage, to go and work a Rotary Luncheon or something, Lions Club and different fraternal organizations. But I think also there is something to do with flight time in contests. Enter contests. Even if you lose, you learn something. There were 2 or 3 magicians there who totally failed and said, look, I'm sorry, at least I tried.
Yeah.
And, I mean, obviously they didn't win, but the point is they got some flight time and also got the experience of what it's like to be under pressure for a contest.
And they got experience on failure.
Exactly.
And because, you know, like I teach a lot of kids on how to do magic. We spend a lot of time talking about what do you do when something goes wrong. Because you do magic for any time at all, like 5 minutes, and something will go wrong. So
that's true.
So you know, what do you do? And I think that's a big lesson in itself because if you're on a big stage or for a big client and something goes wrong, you need to be able to recover from it.
Well, speaking of that, let's move into the stage act for the evening because the previous night, of course, we trashed that enough. I shouldn't, because a lot of things went wrong with the final performer. Russell's show was fraught with bad problems. They were self-inflicted, but the other acts were good. So a lot of times we were just talking here at breakfast about a lot of times when people remember the show as being bad, but it wasn't. There was just one performer made it bad. It was at the end that unfortunately people remember that.
Yeah, the rest of the show was really good. It was opened by Harry Allen, and Harry just killed. Of course, Harry always kills, but it was great. And I always tell people that Harry is probably the most dangerous person in magic because I can't talk to him without spending money. So
that's true. He'll take your money and you'll be glad. Can I give you more?
Yeah.
But last night's show was emceed then by our president, Bronson Chadwick, mm-hmm. and they opened with his dad, Bruce Chadwick, doing some illusions, which were fantastic. I thought his presentations were great.
And Bruce's granddaughter was...
Zoe?
Zoe, yeah. She was in the stage contest, but also she was on stage there with her grandfather being punched full of holes.
And she was, that's right. And she was in the stage contest. She's only 10 years old, so she was entered as a junior.
Yeah, she was. I did not get to see the stage contest.
Delightful.
I got stuck with Alan, with Harry Allen.
Okay.
Like I said, the most dangerous man in magic. Yeah. And so I did not get to see it, but I heard nothing but good things about it.
Yeah. Yeah. The stage show was fantastic. The acts were very solid, looked like they rehearsed a lot, and as a judge, we had a lot of things to discuss. That's why it took us so long to try to, because there were some fine points between some people. It's like, okay, well, what did you really like, or what did you see in your room, or whatever kind of a thing.
But they were
all good. So, again, Bronson and Bruce kind of went back and forth for a while and doing some things. I thought Bronson really tied it together, doing some things I hadn't seen before.
He did a great job MC.
He did a great job. I'd recommend him for an MC for your convention.
I had not seen him MC before. But he did a good job.
Absolutely. Kept things going along, mm-hmm. and he was aware that there were some difficulties backstage occasionally, and he was able to fill the time, not kill the time.
Right. He did a great job. I have nothing but good things to say about his skill there as an MC.
And who was after him? I'm trying to remember who was next up.
What was it? Dal and Cindy?
Dal Sanders. That's right. Dal and Cindy came out and did an upside-down chair, which was kind of a nice thing to begin with.
They opened with that. And it was kind of a thing. But they came out and did the shopping cart with the bags.
Yeah, kind of a mentalism thing, but it was a very interactive thing with people from the audience. Yeah. So it was very, very interesting.
Yeah, it was, I had never seen it done before.
No.
And so I thought it was very, very... intriguing.
They work very well together.
They do.
Being married for so long and everything they've done, I mean, his stage skills, stagecraft is just perfect.
Yeah. Yeah, they were great. They were great together.
Jeanette Andrews, who we'll be talking to a little bit later, performed, and it's the first time I'd seen her do her stage act. Very artful. Very artful.
In fact, I don't know if you talked about her lecture at all, but her lecture was very intellectual, very thought-provoking, and her performance was much the same. Mm-hmm. It was, like you say, artful. It wasn't just a trick. Mm-hmm. It was something to think about.
And I felt like that sometimes that she was in tableau, the way that she would stop and to kind of look at the audience. It's like, take a picture of this in your mind.
Yeah.
Kind of a thing. Like,
Chris
if you're...
talks about that. She thinks about, because she was trained in art, and so she thinks about pictures. So she takes a pose, mm-hmm. and so she talks about doing that as well. I noticed that as well.
And someone was sitting next to me saying, well, there was no music. I said, when you go to a museum, there is no music except what plays in your mind. It gives you more time to think about the picture.
That was going through my mind. I thought, she really needs music here. And then I said, no, she doesn't.
No,
because I think the music would actually have detracted from it.
Correct.
From what she was trying to...
And the little she used towards the end was something that was... It was really more of a tone.
Yeah.
Constant... or whatever.
Yeah,
And very artistic.
Yeah. So I've been trying to get a hold of her to try to get her in the New Magic Academy.
Yeah.
So, again, Jeanette, if you listen to this and I can't get a hold of you, get a hold of me.
So she did a great job performing then as well. And I know we had Daryl Sprout, who brought out snakes.
Oh, yeah.
Snakes. What are you talking about? Snakes. Live snakes, yes.
And
he does birthday parties with snakes.
snakes. And I thought he said something interesting that used to be little boys that were interested in that, and now it's little girls.
Yeah.
And I'm going, I was sitting next to someone who was deathly afraid of snakes, and she basically crawled in my lap.
I saw a couple of people get up and leave whenever he brought out the first snake and put it on his head. And
It was interesting. What was interesting, like he did a lot of, did some things like with Dove Tray that...
Dove pan
with snakes instead of doves or rabbits or something like that.
Yeah.
So it took some of the classics of magic and put them in the snakes.
Right.
It was a little different.
Yeah, he just introduced some snakes first of all and talked about venomous snakes, et cetera. And he said snakes aren't poisonous, they're venomous, which is a difference.
So they taste like chicken.
Yeah. That's right. They're not poisonous. And then he was talking about, after he talked about snakes, showed some snakes, then he did some magic with snakes.
Yeah, he did. And it was actually very entertaining to do that.
Yeah. So then he had this also a, afterwards was Ian Richards, is that right, who had performed next after him?
You know, I'm pulling a blank right now. You're asking an old man here.
Well, there are two old men in between us. I thought we might have a half a brain, especially this morning. I've only had a cup of coffee and one. But Ian Richards had done some very good comedy, which he's known for. And he's
Yes. Okay, now thank you for drawing my brain. Yes, he did some good stuff again. It was simple magic, but it was very entertaining. And I think that there's a lesson to be learned there, is that your magic doesn't have to be complicated. It doesn't have to be new to be entertaining. It's how you present it, because that was the strength there. It was,
that's right.
The comedy there.
Yeah, where he was using then a pom-pom stick that was a plumbing device, you know, basically. And then he put a plumber's helper on his head, a suction cup thing, and then kind of waved his head around like it was the wand, you know, or whatever, and some other things that happened.
Yeah.
Very entertaining. And then Mike Squires followed him. He has done a lot of comedy clubs as well, and was very engaging with the audience and did a great job.
Yeah, and that was fun as well. To see that.
And then it was closed out by Losander, and most people who are listening have seen Losander. If you haven't, you run,
you
don't walk.
To. Yeah, you need to. Losander was great. He opened, every time I've seen him, he opened with his dancing cane. Mm-hmm. And of course, I think the only one who can rival him with dancing cane may be Ray Anderson. But he's a master of that. And just did it great. In fact, I was looking at it and thinking, okay, what can I learn from this? Because there is so much in that that you can watch it over and over again and learn something new every time.
Right, right. And I was saying yesterday, those who listened to the episode, the brief chat we did have, I was talking about his show in Las Vegas, because he has a theater there. And if you ever get to Vegas, I highly recommend it, because it's very intimate. And he does everything that he sells, you know, basically. And many things in the show, full show.
Yeah, it was, and he did a lot of the stuff that he lectured on earlier. You know?
Yeah.
And so to see the lecture and then see him actually perform it in a real show, that was an education in itself.
Yeah, yeah. And then we pretty much wrapped up the evening with with Trixie Bond talking about Texas magicians who have passed and who she has known personally.
Yeah.
Starting with Willard the Wizard on the way down to Sal Manfredo, who just died this weekend.
And I did not grow up in Texas. I was born in Kansas, but I got here as fast as I could.
Yeah. I'm from Illinois, but I've been here for 30 years.
Yeah. And so I never realized how colorful
and rich
the history of magic in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was interesting in itself. Even the tie to the JFK assassination, that was, you know, don't deliver the letter.
The letter, yeah.
Yeah, if you haven't seen that, don't know what I'm talking about. You actually need to see Trixie's lecture, because it is really interesting. You go, maybe there.
So. And we continue to uncover things. I say we, because I've been working with her a little bit on this. And part of it was when we added this with Harry Blackstone, who was there. Mm-hmm. It was kind of interesting, because Gay was telling us a story. He said, really? And we started looking into it more and got that information. Well, even when she gave the presentation, I mean, that little talk we had yesterday during the stage contest, she'd mentioned, we talked briefly about the conspiracy. And someone from the audience had given her a card, and I'm going to keep this a secret for a while, too, but there's another connection as well.
Oh, this guy
knows somebody who knows somebody.
That was interesting. My son is an actor, and he played a role about the JFK in a movie, a full feature movie. And so I kind of tied that to what, you know, the role that he played.
Yeah.
And so though I have nothing to do with JFK or the assassination, I was tied through that. So.
Yeah. It was a fulfilling day and a lot of fun, and the evening show was very good. And one night to the next, it was a good show, and looking forward to this evening show and today's activities, too.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, and they got the gospel lecture show this morning, and so I got up early enough to go see that. So.
Oh, there we go. It's we still got a few minutes before that, and then I'm going to be going over to talk with Jeanette, and so maybe if after the gospel breakfast you can go over and join us there, too.
I will.
Okay.
All right.
J.D., thank you very much for joining us.
All right. Thank you for having me, Scott.
And don't forget, everybody out there, to go to magicacademy.com.
NewMagicAcademy.com.
New Magic Academy.
It's the new one, not the old one.
NewMagicAcademy.com. That was J.D. Stewart. This is Scotty out. We're in the dealer's room now, and I haven't had a chance really to get around to many dealers, and you can't go in the dealer's room without passing by the Daytona Magic, and Harry Allen here is right now. Harry, hey, Harry.
Hello there, Scotty. How you doing, buddy?
Fantastic. Always good to see you, and as we talked before, when we were at the last, I don't remember what the convention was.
Might have been Magic Live in Vegas. I don't know.
Could have been, and we were just talking about how, was it Abbott's? No, you weren't at Abbott's.
No, it was not at Abbott's.
No, but it was something in which we were just saying, well, looking forward to seeing you. I'll see you in Fort Worth, and here we are in Fort Worth.
Bam, like
that. No, because we were talking about the, I know it was the IBM convention, because we were talking about
Atlanta.
The sweetener rabbits.
There you go.
As well. How's that been selling for you, by the way?
I literally brought extra, and they're all gone.
I can see why. I've been trying to push those as well.
Thank
it's
you.
A great, great trick.
You know what? It's rare that you have something that, I mean, there's so many items on the market nowadays. When you get something that excels, it's rare, and this is one that really, really excelled.
And we made a video of that, and that, I don't know how many views, but there have been a lot.
It's
people
good fun.
I mean,
I'm going to go to the grocery store, go to the restaurant, and people enjoy watching it.
The thing I would ask about that is, why can't you buy more of those, like a bag of those things, because I'd like to be able to give them out.
Simple answer, it will cut down on the sales of the item.
Okay.
I mean, if you show it to another magician... Oh, he don't need to buy the trick. Just go come in and buy a bag of rabbits.
Yeah, well, that's true. That's true.
It's always marketing on my mind.
Well, eventually that might happen.
I just think it's
such a great trick, and it's a beginner-type trick, but it's something that is memorable and people will want to keep.
Absolutely right. No, it's good. A lot of fun, and it's so easy to carry with you. It's just a foam rabbit, so it's lightweight.
So what have you got that's new also that's a new seller for you?
Oh, my goodness. We've got a couple of good pieces. The Legacy system is fantastic. It was just brought out at the Magic Live. I was standing next to David Copperfield and his friends, and it was like a preview before the dealer's room opened. Wayne was with me, and he showed it to us, Juan, or Joe, put it out, and it's just like jaw-dropping. It's the wallet. It's a fantastic minimalism piece of magic
with a
miniature printer inside.
Well, I know we're starting to kind of wrap up the convention year, but it's not going to be wrapped up until we have the Daytona, Florida State Magic Convention, which is November, right?
November 4, 5, and 6.
And you're going to be honoring Gabe Blackstone?
Gabe Blackstone, yeah. We just done so much for magic, obviously, and so on. And her cohort, Harriet, will be there.
Yeah.
And love to have you there as well, if you can make it.
That's going to be, I think, the same week I'm going to be at Trix up in North Carolina.
You know, we do our convention, and we try very hard to get it away from every other convention.
Mm-hmm.
We also have a very big tourist area with the Daytona 500, et cetera, et cetera. So we get it when the hotel is not having a big event, so we can get a better rate. Exactly. And hurricane season, we try to get away from that as well.
Yeah, when you kind of start crossing off all these things, there are very few windows that are open.
100% right. Exactly right. So that's why we cornered that date and make it. And, of course, it's gorgeous weather back in those days, like in the mid-70s in November in Daytona. So it's right on the ocean. Our main shows are in a Broadway-style theater, which is great.
And if people want to register for the convention, again, where can they go?
Best is to go to DaytonaMagic.com. There's an icon for convention. You just click on it, and it'll tell you how to get there. Very, very reasonably priced convention at $175 for everything.
Well, that's everything. And then what's the hotel rate this year?
I'm not sure off the top of my head. Maybe $100 a quarter, maybe.
Yeah, pretty good deal.
It's right on the ocean, it's a beautiful. And the resort is the Plaza Resort and Spa. They just put millions into it because new owners took it over about a year ago.
Yeah. I've been to the convention a few times, and not just a registrant, but also one of my favorite things I wish would have been recorded was when I was hosting a panel discussion, as you might very well remember. It had Jack Codell, Celeste Evans, and John Calvert.
Yeah. Was that something
or what? That was great.
No doubt about it. And, you know,
everybody was afterwards were saying, hey, you know, was that recorded? No, it wasn't. Man, how
I know that. And, you know, the irony of things are we don't live forever. And when you get a chance to meet these folks and talk with them and do like you did and so on, it's just something that you remember for the rest of your life.
And that's the kind of thing, if you come to these conventions, like where we are at the TOM or going to the Florida State Convention, you're going to get these experiences that you'll never get again.
Absolutely. And we always try to bring classics into the Daytona Beach Festival of Magic. We had one year, besides John Calvert, we've had everywhere from Carl Ballantyne from McHale's Navy. Of course, Johnny Thompson's been there. Just a ton of names, McBride, you know, all the big names.
It's great. A lot of fun. Register. I mean, if you're not going to be here for this convention, you could register for next year, the TOM, which is going to be in Houston, and I'm going to be there. You should be as well, but also make sure you sign up for, what's the name of the convention exactly?
It's called the Daytona Beach Festival of Magic.
There we go.
Yep, and the TOM is like my sister convention. We love it here.
People
are
awesome.
We know everybody. And
thank you.
Great people.
Thanks very much. That was awesome. Harry Allen, DaytonaMagic.com. Scotty Allen. As we're still walking around the convention dealer's room area, I'm here with a person we spoke to briefly yesterday, and there's so much more to say, but we don't have a whole lot of time, but I do want to talk with Losander. Hi there, Dirk. How are you?
Hi, how are you?
Fantastic. It's always good to see you, and I know this is one of your favorite conventions. You seem to come here frequently.
Right. I've been here almost at every TAOM, yes.
I think so. Well, it seems like, well, we've been here for 77 years, so you haven't been to everyone.
No.
You've been coming for quite some time, and obviously a favorite, and that you have a lot of great ideas and things, and that the lecture was enjoyed by everybody yesterday. I was talking with someone just this morning who was saying they really enjoyed Exquisite.
Floating glass. Yeah.
Yep. Just a lot of other things that's just really good, and it was a good way of closing the show last night, I thought, with you doing levitation and everything. And it was done very well. And so I was going to back to the dealers here for just a second. How many dealers have we got here in the room? It probably looks like 12 maybe or so.
Yeah,
dealers, I guess,
10,
roughly.
12, something around
how,
that, yeah.
Has there been a good flow of traffic? We have like about 250 registrants. What's it been like?
I mean, for me, it has been pretty good because of the lecture.
That helps.
You know what I mean? That helps. But there's a lot of dead time here, like every other dealer's room, you know.
Yeah.
But I think overall, it's okay. Yeah, people come in, and sometimes I like it if it's not too busy at times, because then you have more time to talk to the individual people.
Right.
And that's sometimes more effective. In
right.
my personal opinion.
Yeah. I kind of like that you do get more quality time that way. Certainly, plus time to explain how some of these things work, because they might want a little personal instruction.
Right.
When it's really busy, let's say, like, you're going to be at Blackpool or Magic Live. It's like
Blackpool, you don't have much time for for long conversations and stuff,
right.
So here you have.
They hand you the money, and they take the trick, and they're gone, which
That's
is
right.
a good thing in a way,
yes,
but
yes.
Still, it's nice to spend some quality time saying, okay, here's a little finesse on
this.
Oh,
for sure, yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
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 Have you got something new that you've been working on, or some new floating thing?
At the moment, not really, no. I mean, the latest thing is the vanishing table, and of course that sells for a pretty high price, but for a reason, I don't want everybody to do it. You know, only the real professionals, or I should say whoever wants to invest that kind of money, you know.
Sure, of course, yeah.
yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's my latest thing so far, and I have smaller stuff, but that's about it.
Have you done any redesigning of the tables over the years? As you're doing that, do you have some tweaks or something that you kind of design the base differently? Or
I always redefine things and try to make them better, and you know, try to stand out towards the copies, since there's more copies on Earth than sand on the ocean.
That's too bad. That's a sad thing. And not much you can do about that. It's a whack-a-mole. You hit one, they pop up somewhere.
Unfortunately, you can't. It's in every business, not only in the magic business, but every business gets copied, you know what I mean? I wish there would be, like, a more
ethical
thing. And, you know, I mean, honestly, the thing is this. If you go to a bank right now and you were to rob, let's just only say $100, you go to jail.
Right.
No question. You do something like that with somebody's idea, you steal it, and you could potentially make like hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Right, right.
Nothing is going to happen to you. And I think there's a big problem in our system. You know what I mean?
Very good.
So that should be just as bad as somebody stealing from the bank.
That's true. That's right. Yeah. But I was going to say, what can you do? I mean, there are some laws, but then trying to catch them, it's very difficult.
Yeah. I think so, that's the thing. But, I mean, we can start all by the individual people, by just supporting no matter who it is who comes up with an idea, because everybody has to understand, when they perform somewhere and they have maybe not even their own idea, but they have maybe one illusion they worked their entire life on and gave it a little spin, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
And if somebody were to sit in the audience and writes down every detail of what they're doing and steal it, it doesn't make you feel good. No
right.
matter what.
And
that's
right.
the same thing, what they're doing basically by stealing somebody's illusion or invention they created in magic. So that should be more honored, and everybody can work on it. Yeah, they all have the same excuse. Yeah, but it's too expensive, so I have to buy a copy. No, you don't. I mean, just save up your money.
Right.
And do that, you know.
And support the originators, basically.
Yeah, it's like a car dealership sells only stolen cars, you know. That wouldn't work, you know.
That's a very good way of putting it. We sell stolen cars here.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the same thing. So just everybody needs to realize by supporting the originator that there will be probably more original illusions coming out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
People are okay.
Do you think some people have purchased a your table thinking they were, I'm sorry, a knockoff table thinking they were buying a Losander table?
Yeah, that happens a lot. Yeah, but I offer that. I mean, before people buy it, they can just send me a picture, and then I can tell on the picture if it's an original or a copy. Yeah.
Well, of course, you can tell because it's your baby. I mean,
yeah, that's
but
right.
To them, they're thinking, well, it looks the same, you know, from just a picture on the website.
But I see all the details, and I can immediately tell. Yeah.
Right. That makes a big difference. And, so again, support the originator. You
for
know,
sure.
And go with you. So if people do want to find some of the great stuff that you've got, I mean, I love, and I've got a lot of things that you already, but you do sell. Where can they, what's the website?
www.losander.com.
Losander.com. That's
very
easy enough. That's right. And as we mentioned yesterday, I do want people to go to the Las Vegas Magic Theater.
Yes.
Because I saw 20 shows while I was out there for the month of June.
Right, right.
And yours was on one of the top of my list. And it was just tremendous. I absolutely loved the show. And I tell everybody, if you're going to Vegas, it's one of the smaller shows. It's over on Main Street, over in the Arts District. But I recommend you need to go see it.
Yeah, it's definitely a very special experience. It's more than a show. It's more like an experience.
It is experience, exactly.
Because you're so close to it, and you feel almost like you're sitting in a living room. And it's a very special experience, seeing all the big stuff up close.
Right. Yep, exactly. That's the way you feel. Like what you say, like a living room experience.
Right,
you know,
right.
That's kind of cool.
Right.
So, very good. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
For the Magic Word Podcast. That was Losander. Scotty out.
Bye.
Thank you. Another one of the dealers we've got here was someone actually who was lecturing. I talked about Losander, who recently lectured then as well. And I don't know, Harry Allen actually did a dealer demo. But we've got Lynetta Welch with FabricManipulation.com. Hello, Lynetta.
Hello. How are you?
Good. We talked briefly yesterday. For those who are listening to the podcast, could hear the brief conversation. But it was very brief. We talked like less than 5 minutes.
Yeah.
So
for me, that's very brief.
I was going to say, your lecture today went for an hour and a half, and we could have gone a lot longer, I know.
I could have kept going.
You had a lot of great slides.
They messed up. They told me, nothing's in the room after you. So, yeah, go ahead. You can talk as long as you want. They didn't realize as long as I want is really long. I would, and then I started noticing, I think there's something else that's going to come into the room. So I was like, okay, I got to wrap this up.
Yeah.
But I could have probably talked
very easily
for
talked
hour.
About a lot of the interesting things that had to do with all the different fabric and the way that you found these things, and then you had to take them, because those were the way they were done back then. We have different kinds of techniques, I assume, for sewing today with the machines.
Well, I think we have better machine. Well, I would say that actually
most
some of the
hand stitched.
A lot of stuff is hand stitched. Most of the things I make involve both hand stitching and machine stitching. Even my egg bags, part of them are done by hand, but then part of them are done on the machine.
Mm-hmm.
So, but actually, the machines from the 50s and 70s, I kind of like some of those better than the machines.
Are you talking about
today.
The Singer machines? Is that what you
I'm
use?
Talking about some of the older, like old Singers.
Mm-hmm.
They're just really good, beefy, sturdy, all metal
machines. Yeah.
And that's kind of hard to find these days.
Well, now it looks like you're kind of out of stock almost of everything. What have you got left? Just a couple of egg bags?
I have a couple egg bags and some bottle gizmos. That's why I said in my lecture, I'm really not trying to sell you a bunch of stuff here at my booth. Just come by, take a look at the things I talked about, and let's chat.
Like Johnny Thompson's
everything.
Jacket
I've
right
got
there.
Got Johnny Thompson's jacket cool. right there. Yeah, that's pretty cool. When he passed away, they asked me what I wanted. And I said, well, I don't know if you want to give this to me or not, but what I really want his jacket.
And his egg bag.
His egg bag. Yeah. I already had
some of
his egg bags.
So this material, it looks like it's got around the lapel. Is that some sort of felt? Or it looks like two different kinds of material.
That's like a velvet. This was he liked to do that on his jackets. I had his new jacket and was reworking some of this on his new jacket. But, yeah, he put velvet on his cuffs and velvets at the, the back part of the collar. You can look right here. There's the gum.
Great picture.
from Pam. There's some marks right there. That was some bird poop. These are his medals. This, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, I think this is from the IBM ring, like in Kansas City.
That's what David Sandy was talking
about. Yeah, he was surprised when he saw that. And I'm like, yeah, this really was what he had on his jacket because he liked the way that looked. And then you can see even inside how he put his pockets in. He Velcroed.
Did you make any of the pockets, or how much of this jacket, if any, did you make?
I didn't make stuff on this jacket. This was really what he had been wearing for years and years. He had given me a new jacket that I was working on to match this one. And when he passed away, I had the jacket, so I have.
But he wasn't performing anymore. You were making a new jacket that he wasn't going to be using.
It was Johnny. You think he was really retired?
No, well, I know, because it's like, this is the last show. When it was Magic Live, this is my last show.
Yeah.
This is my last show.
Yeah. Well, you know, along those lines, you know, when Doug Henning passed away, I made I had six jackets of his that I had just put tappets in because Doug was putting together a lecture tour and was wanting to go around and lecture to magicians. But
wow,
he
that would have been
away.
Something.
It would have really been something. I don't know if many people know that.
I never heard that before.
Yeah, but he told me personally, so yeah. I mean, I know that's what he was doing. And I had done, yeah, I had put six tappets in for him.
Wow.
Yeah.
I can't imagine Doug Henning using a tappet because he always wore like spandex or something. You know,
he didn't wear spandex. I don't know if people like this. Doug was really, really small.
Very tiny guy.
And they were women's jackets.
Oh.
Yeah. He was so small, his jackets didn't fit me.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Or maybe they did. They were like, I think, they were like a size 6 women's.
Are you 5'4"?
I'm 5'2".
5'2".
I have 2-inch heels on right now.
My mother was 5'2".
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, he was very small. I mean, people know that, but yeah, I think you don't realize just how
right
how small.
But as we talked about yesterday briefly, then I'll let you go. And that is a kind of thing that you're making. It's not just egg bags, not just scarves, devil's hanks, glorpies, or whatever. Anything that has to do with fabric and also repairing of fabric, or like you said, with jackets or whatever.
Yeah,
so, if people want to come to you, they might want to have a special request of. Sewing something in some material, or can you find something that's silky like, or blouses like this, or has this color that'll blend?
I do a lot of what I call secret work. It's the projects I work on that nobody knows about.
That are specially commissioned?
Yeah, people come to me, and I mean, part of my job is keeping people's secrets.
Sure.
Somebody,
Bill Smith and the other builders of Illusions.
Exactly. When somebody's working on a new project, they don't want me going out blabbing to everybody, I'm working on this project for so-and-so, or, you know, it's, so a lot of the work I do is secret.
Right,
so
right.
People don't know I did it. And then I'll go to a show, and I'm like, oh, yeah, I made a few things in this show. And people are like, what'd you make? I'm like, oh, I can't tell you. They're like, yeah, sure you made stuff in the show. I'm like,
but if they do want to find you, and they want to have something, they can go to?
Fabricmanipulation.com.
Easy enough. There you go. Thank you, Lynetta. I appreciate that.
Thank you, Scott.
So, for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Lynetta Welch. Thank you, Lynetta. Scotty out. Well, most of the day is over right now of this third day and the second full day. Boy, it's kind of hard to nail these down, say exactly how it is. Anyhow, this is Sunday. It's about finished. I think we've got one more little activity to go, and that is a video we're going to be showing later of Gabe Blackstone, who unfortunately couldn't be here, but I believe they've got something in her stead that they're going to replace, and we'll talk about that later after that has been viewed. But in the meantime, there was something that we overlooked this morning when J.D. Stewart and I were talking, and that is Midnight Madness that was hosted by my guest right now, Fabian Moreno. Hey there, Fabian.
Hey there, Scott. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's always good to be had.
Yes.
And so it's good to have you then here as well. And you have recently just relocated to San Antonio. How long have you been in San Antonio?
Yes, sir. I've been in San Antonio now for about the last 4 months. Came in at about mid to late April.
So all during COVID, you were where?
All during COVID, I was in the Rio Grande Valley back home. Yes, sir, with my family.
Now, were you working on your master's back then? Or?
No, I had just finished my master's. Mm-hmm. I had some calls to do a lecture tour, mm-hmm. and then the end of the world happened.
Yeah.
So everything just kind of fell apart, and I did the most practical thing, which was lose my mind with my family. I wasn't depressed. I was just living at home.
Sure. Yeah. Well, now we're having more fun. You're back out. And yes. Is this the first convention that you've been to since then, or have you done something?
No. I was at Magic Live. It was my first ever introduction to the podcast in person with Raj Madog and then Curtis Hickman and mm-hmm. yourself. Yeah. So that was fun, yeah. Got a little teaser.
Yeah, so there we go. So now we get to talk with you a little bit longer here. Yes. And just you exclusively without those other schlumps being with us.
I didn't even know we had company. I really didn't. I didn't know.
I love those guys. So you were the host of the Midnight Madness last night. Now, let me explain the history of the Midnight Madness before you had been involved.
Yes.
It goes back to the days of Roger Clouse.
Yes. So from what my understanding is, about maybe 8 years ago when I first participated, my friend Dan Butler, who would be known by Dan Strange, kind of egged me on to go on stage and share my whatever I was working on with some of the guys, and I was none the wiser as to what this idea was about. It was only after it happened they told me, hey, you know, Roger, one of the foremost underground legends not only of the Texas scene but of the close-up magic scene, period, would always pick guys that he thought, you know, were made of the right stuff to kind of put on a show, sort of an open mic night. And traditionally, you may correct me if I'm wrong, it would always finish before midnight.
We did get started actually initially at midnight because okay. It used to be that we would hang out with Roger and just kind of until dawn someplace in the lobby or whatever and do card tricks, mostly told jokes and things.
Okay.
It was a lot of fun. But then he started saying, okay, well, let's do something at midnight. And so it did start out like a midnight thing. And then they started backing it up a little bit, going from 11 till midnight. It sometimes would end around midnight. And then but go on from there.
Yes. So Dan Butler was really the gentleman who got me involved and kind of opened the door for me to make friends with some of the people that I'm lucky enough and proud of to call my friends, who shall remain nameless here because we have to protect the guilty and not the innocent. But he passed a few years back, and I never forgot his kindness and just how generous he was with me. So when I had the opportunity to be featured on the talent lineup this year, I called Bronson and I asked if I could host Midnight Madness out of respect for Dan. And, of course, we've lost a lot of people since then. Chuck Smith just recently, Presley Guitar.
Sal Manfredo just this weekend.
Yes. So these are still very fresh. So I wanted to pay tribute to that, to my friend and to the history of close-up magic on the underground scene in general. And it was fun. We had guys who are really worth weight pound, inch for inch and pound for pound on their weight, and other people that just came in to pick on the guys.
Well, originally, again, that when Roger was calling on people, they'd be friends of Roger's.
Yes.
He would say, once we got there, I mean, it wasn't prior to the convention that he would contact people and say, hey, I want you to do this or that. It's whoever was there, and he'd say, Scott, I want you to do 15 minutes. Or, you know, I want you, not 15 minutes. He'd say, you do that neat little thing that you were showing me the other night. Can you show that? And so that was the thing. And so then, okay, Frank Price, I want you to do that bill switch thing, you know.
Yes, so that was very much kind of the way this worked. Although I needed some help, I did call Ron Wilson, who was one of Dan's best friends, along with Greg Lancaster, and they kind of geared me in the right direction as to how to format it, how to keep it, how to run it. And then I called people that I've known for years that were in the area that I knew could be funny, could be entertaining, and mm-hmm. something that was really intricate for the card guys. We had Trini Montez, who's one of the premier card workers.
I didn't know he was here.
Yeah. Trini did something. We finally got him to do something at Midnight Madness, and people loved it. Yeah. Jake and David Rangel. Of course, Jay was in there. We had someone trying to break a wine glass, which kind of served as our primary. It was the best advertising we could have because everyone was saying, what's that noise? And they came in. But the idea was to keep it running, keep it short and smooth. I did no magic. I just messed around because it wasn't about me. It was about tradition of what Midnight Madness
is. And you were trying to keep it going.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, yes. Danny Garcia was another one who took it on for a while as well.
Yes, yeah. In fact, the last Midnight Madness that I went into was in Houston before the pandemic, and Michael Weber was there, John Archer, Xavier Spade, just a whole bunch of guys that you don't normally see at these conventions. And
some of these things then also, not only after a while, I think it kind of floundered because they couldn't find a person who mm-hmm. was reliable who would come back every year to handle that. Mm-hmm. And so then it kind of turned into a bizarre or a gothic or more of a dark seance kind of a thing for a few years.
Yes.
And as a result of that, that's something has grown out of that. So mm-hmm. we now have a night special for that.
Yes. From what I understand now, they're interested in keeping this going. However, I kind of want to keep it off the books just out of tradition. You know, I have fun in saying,
because you're always underground guys, and it should be an underground event.
Exactly. And I just like saying it's the only officially unofficial convention event.
Yeah,
yeah. Just a bunch of troublemakers looking to have a good time and kind of welcome in, you know, the new kids. We had 15-year-olds and 12-year-olds and kids way past their bedtime there last night, but yeah. They kind of opened up and they had fun together.
I was about to ask you about what was the attendance like. I wasn't there. I was busy working on the podcast, but what was going on?
So we started with about 10 people, and it grew, and I think by the end of the evening we had about 60, 70 people in one of those close-up rooms. They were piled up by the door. So it turned out to be a lot better than I expected.
Well, then this morning we had a gospel magic show, and then the board meeting, and I was also then doing an episode with Jeanette Andrews, which will be coming out much later, probably sometime closer to Christmas time. I'm telling the listeners now to be listening for that and watching your reading your pod letter to know when she's going to be released. That one's going to be released because it was phenomenal. It was one of those that once we got going, I mean, there was no stopping her, and I didn't need to talk anymore. She did it all. She carried all the conversation, and she was great. So anyhow, we talked for a while, and then after that was Lynetta Welch, who talked about fabric manipulation, gave the history of different fabrics. I mean, things have been sewn in jackets and in pants and vests, and as well as dove harnesses and egg bags and everything like that, in kind of the history of some of that going back in to the 1600s, 1700s and everything, and some of the books that have been written. Did you get to see any of that?
I was fast asleep.
You need to get some rest sometime.
But Lynetta's lovely, lovely. Any questions I've ever had to ask her, she's always answered with more information.
You know, you could be the next Roger Clouse, because that was something I never realized. He was always, it seems like that he was around all the time, and I was up with him, you know, toe-to-toe 4 in the morning, and then we'd get up early, had to have breakfast, and then all these other activities, and I thought, Roger, how did you do that? And it wasn't until probably a decade later I realized he takes naps. And so, just like you said, that's the secret. Take naps.
Yes. In fact, I bailed on lunch today because I said, I'm going to go take a nap. I'm 30 years old. I like a comfortable chair and a reasonable bedtime. Doesn't matter what time of day.
There you go. So, yeah, she did a great job, and had plenty of time, and so she went for about an hour and a half, supposed to be about an hour, but there was so much material, no pun intended, she had a lot of material she was talking about. She didn't have a lot of stuff to sell because she had sold out pretty much of everything, because before she came, she was just working nonstop because of trying to get rid of some back orders, plus get some things ready to sell for here. But anyhow, she did a great job, and I love Lynetta, and I've got most of everything that she makes and sells commercially. She does a lot of custom things. And she also brought Johnny Thompson's jacket. Did you notice that?
No, I did not notice that. Oh, yeah. No, absolutely not.
And, you know, she showed the lapel with all the gum behind it and all that kind of thing and the bird poop.
I wish I would have known. I may still catch her before she leaves. I may make her bring it down just for that.
You should. You get a picture of that.
Oh, I'd love to. Absolutely.
And, in fact, I would recommend to people who are listening to this, if you go to themagicwordpodcast.com, there you will see on the website, on the blog, I've got photos, and one of them will be a picture of Lynetta next to the jacket there as well. Then this afternoon, another reason, Fabian, I want to talk with you here was because that you were involved with the Fort Worth Magic Championships. Explain what that is or what was the concept.
So we wanted to provide a little before lunch afternoon show / contest. It was all in good fun. It was rigged from the start. I came in second place. So it was just Bronson just picked two people along with himself to kind of present a different facet of magic throughout the convention. Me being the card guy and kind of the parlor guy, he had me go first, and I did a piece that I kind of held on to for a few years, and another piece inspired by Bob Hummer. It was just a lot of fun. I haven't had that much fun at a convention in a very long time. So I told Bronson, if you just let me loose, we'll do whatever it is that we can. I think I lit up during the critique with a cigarette, put that out. But at the end of the day, I didn't win. So obviously the judges were in on it. Clearly.
They're being paid.
Yeah.
And it was interesting that they had a lady who was the MC who was a ventriloquist, Jackie Mena.
Yes. I thought for a second she was related to Lisa Mena.
And is she not?
No, spelled completely different.
Okay. Mena rather than Mena.
Exactly, yeah. And her grandma is quite attractive, I may say.
Yeah, you kissed her.
Yeah, there was some tongue in there, yes.
Some cloth tongue.
Yes, I'm still picking it out right now. And then we also had a gospel gentleman who gave the gospel lecture as well. So it was a very diverse thing, but you know, people were in the spirit of it, and I think that's pretty much what kind of got Sunday going for everybody.
And so that was just really kind of a fun thing to go. It wasn't really kind of necessarily a championship.
No. We all knew that.
It wasn't intended to have people sign up and do something.
Yeah, no, it wasn't intended. It wasn't even real. Bronson just wanted to put on something entertaining and just something a little ridiculous, because the way he said, the way he thought was, after Friday and Saturday of so much stress and people kind of being able to feel the structure of the convention, he wanted something a little more relaxed, a little more laissez-faire, and just a lot more palatable. Right, in that case, right. Yes.
And then following that this afternoon, what was going on?
Close-up shows.
That's right. We did have the close-up shows.
Yeah. And? Well, we were supposed to do 4 shows. We ended up doing 3 in 3 very different climate-controlled close-up rooms. If it wasn't cold, it was hot. If it wasn't hot, it was humid and damp. In fact, I had to ask Trixie. I was, Trixie, I want to wear my slacks, my button-up, and my coat, but I'm a heavy sweater. Mm-hmm. And she's, Fabian, don't do it. Just put your jacket on. Keep it black. Keep it simple because you're too handsome to look like a wet mop. I was like, thank you for your candor, Trixie. I appreciate it. But it was a lot of fun. The crowds were great. Mary, of course, was on her A game. I'm not sure if Mary's made an appearance on the podcast, but Mary has.
She's not. I probably need to have her. And Mary is the ultimate volunteer. She is to the TAOM what Harriet Jacobson is to Abbott's get-together. She's the person who everyone calls on because she's a perfect volunteer.
Yeah, I want to take her with me everywhere.
Every person said that. Jeanette Andrews said in her room, she said, I'll pay you. Come with me to New York. I seriously want to have you come.
You can't invent spectators like that. And yeah. She's a lovely, lovely person. But close-up was a lot of fun. It was myself, Jeanette Andrews, Grant Price, Jay Zuga, and Sylvan.
Sylvan Juzon.
Yes. I'm not even going to try to pronounce
it. He's from Luxembourg.
The German.
He's French.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, he's French?
Yes, he's French, he's been in Luxembourg for a few years now.
Oh, wow. I was completely off.
Yeah,
wow.
There you go.
Well, we'll edit that part in post.
And also, that was them, and they did a great job. It was truly a professional close-up show, and it was well done to you and others as well.
Oh, thank you. Well, I hope so. I wanted to do right by a piece that I debuted when I first started competing 10 years ago, which was A Cards Crossed, which I'll be tipping at the lecture tomorrow. In honor of the late, great Barry Richardson, because he was really the one that kind of pushed me to develop that piece to a certain degree.
Is that what you were doing also in the championships when you ended up with the cards in your pocket?
No. That's my handling of a general card to pocket ploy.
Okay.
I've always loved those two effects, the general card, cards across, well, 3 effects, and the card to pocket.
Okay.
And that's done from a straight pack, so I think people are going to get a kick out of that. Yeah.
Looking forward to it.
Thanks
very much. So, for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Fabian Moreno. Scotty out. One of the things, of course, that we have on the Texas Association of Magicians agenda is something that's similar to what other conventions do, and that is that we have contests. And one of the contestants and winners is with me here today, who's been performing for a while, and I've been fortunate enough to be on the stage with her then as well. And I say yes, her. That is a young lady from Austin, Texas, Paprika. Hey there, Paprika.
Hey, Scott.
Congratulations. I'm so happy for you. That is great. And so you won first in comedy.
No,
First in stage. Well, that's right.
Yeah.
You entered comedy and you ended up winning stage.
Exactly. That was why I was not only flabbergasted, I still am. I can barely say the word. But
completely unexpected.
Yeah, you know, so I thought I'd been pulled up and won the comedy. And I'm standing up there and then Greg comes up and I'm like, he goes, no, you were moved to stage. And I went, I won stage? And he goes, yes.
After you had won the award, you still thought you were there for comedy.
I did.
Now, that is funny. See, now that's comedy right there. That's comedy.
And did you see the way that I accepted the award?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. I don't even know what was going on. I thought I was filming it.
Were you shooting live?
Well, I thought I was. It wasn't live, but I thought I was recording it.
Yeah.
But I was so flabbergasted, I pushed the wrong button. So I actually, all that video stuff was just
kind of a prop.
But now we're really filming.
So we are right now. That's right.
Yes.
So now the act that you had worked on originally trying to be for a comedy, then to switch to stage, it was funny, but how long did it take you to develop the act and what was your impetus? What were you trying to get across? What were you trying to do with the act?
Well, you know, it's hard to really say because I've been performing for about 30 years and literally all of that comes to the today.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was integrating all of the juggling and performance and comedy and mime and magic that I've come upon in the last 4 or 5 years that I've started studying.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's been, I decided to just try to do something very original because
mm-hmm.
I just couldn't do covers, you know, I couldn't,
right.
I just couldn't do the scripted stuff. And so it was, but actually on this piece, I'd had the Linking Rings idea. The comedy Linking Rings idea for many years, 3 or 4 years probably, about, it's like, wouldn't that be fun to do? How come nobody's doing that? Is anybody doing that?
They're like hula hoop type size rings. They're a little bit smaller.
No,
maybe?
No, with the linking rings comedy, with the
jewelry. Oh, catching on your jewelry.
Catching on my jewelry. Yeah, mm-hmm. And so, so I've been playing with the idea. And Ken, I was just calling to Ken Cummins, and he's like, I remember when you were talking about this a couple of years ago. So what happened over this, the pandemic, and me trying to recalculate my life after everything shut down? I'm in San Francisco living, just like, I'm going to do it. Boom, no, you're not. Mm-hmm. I went into my cocoon, and literally, at the IBM picnic, mm-hmm. at Trixie's, I did a little piece of this, and this was the first version. And even that day, I was like, I just don't even know if I'm going to do it. And I did it, and I won first at that little mm-hmm. picnic, IBM yeah. thing. So then Trixie, who is just amazing and has become like one of my most important mentors and inspirations, like, sure. You can do this. Mm-hmm. You can win this. And I went, oh, Trixie, let me just see if I can even get a piece together. So that was only really about a month ago, literally, that I just decided to go ahead and commit to the competition here.
So,
and
you didn't start putting together the act until a month ago.
Well, not like I have it, yeah. And thank you, Scott. And I was, I'd worked on that little piece with the jewelry, but I was still kind of figuring things out.
Well, you've done a lot of street magic then also. But, is that something that you did on the street, or you developed exclusively for the contest?
Yeah. Oh. No, this was just for the contest. Yeah. And what it did is, once I made the commitment to competing, I said, okay, let's put something together. And so I have actually been really committed and just saying yes to the possibility of what could happen and just working on it daily. And in Buena Vista, Colorado, where I also live, mm-hmm. I have a little theater there that I was rehearsing. So I had a place to rehearse. And then I was coming here for a screening in Austin. So mm-hmm. I decided to go ahead and do the TAOM when I committed to it. So anyway, it gave me the impetus to really make it happen. And just not worry about the outcome, just play. And so it was fun to just put together. But my goal was to show I can do mime, I can do juggling, I can do magic, I can dance and move and have a character.
Right.
So that was my goal.
Well, that was not something that you developed overnight. You did have all these skills that you just kind of put all into one. And so when you developed the act, it just kind of all came together at one time, it sounds like. I mean...
Well, I didn't know it had really come together until tonight.
Until they gave you the award.
Even won stage? What? Okay.
Yeah, that's right. So what advice would you have for other people who are interested in entering contests?
Well, you know, I actually am very inspired. I've been a teacher for filmmaking and for juggling for mm-hmm. a long, long time, all sorts of places, all over the world, actually. Yep. But the magic is new to me. But I love the originality, and I would love to teach people and work with people on how to integrate variety mm-hmm. into the magic mm-hmm. Because the magicians seem to kind of have a parameter that they like to live in, and I like to push those parameters and see what can magic be, what other options are there, because I've got this other skill set. So that's why I feel very gifted and blessed that I've been able to just throw something together,
right.
Which I didn't just throw together, by the way.
No,
I rehearsed my off to make it happen.
Right.
But
well, it all paid off tonight.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Scott,
that's great.
Wells, you are awesome, and you're my old friend, and
yes,
I love that we've performed together before.
Yes. Well,
so,
I'm thankful to spend time when I do with you, so that's great. Thanks, Patrick.
And we got to go play at Esther's recently too.
That's right, we did go over at Esther's Follies. That was great to see Ray Anderson.
Watch Ray Anderson.
That's right. What a great
play,
guy. What a show. What a show.
Yeah.
Listen, thanks again. Appreciate it.
All right.
Congratulations. So for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Paprika. This is Scotty out.
The evening show was quite different. It was something in which we were going to be visiting the classics of magic, and that is of certain things that we all have seen in magic conventions, which makes them classics. And many of them these tricks are in the repertoires of mainstream magicians. All of us have done at one time or another, whether linking rings or cups and balls or silks and coins or whatever that we're going to be doing. And so that was brought to us then by Trixie Bond in a different form that she has never done before, nor will do again, named Gypsy Bond. As so she was like a gypsy, and this was supposed to be something kind of like a Rod Serling Twilight Zone type of idea of going to a different area into a different zone. So I've got with me somebody right now who has helped in the past to kind of provide a little bit of color to some of the shows, and someone who was on the show then last night who, along with his wife, helped make that the good show that it was last evening for the Saturday night show. Here he is, Dal Sanders. Hey, Dal.
Hey, Scott. First of all, I want to say that I'm very sad that Trixie is not going to reprise the Gypsy Bond role. She was delightful. Yeah. I mean, how many people do you know, first of all, that'll put together a costume that great for a one-shot deal? Only Trixie would do that.
Right.
And she was hilarious. She was so well scripted. Mm-hmm. Everything was so, I mean, written out. I think I got accidentally added to an email chain, uh-huh. and I had gotten a glimpse of the script already.
Yeah.
And I was going like, wow, she's going to put that all together for one. That's amazing. And she did such an incredible job. I mean, she's always good.
She is, anything she does. And the whole time that she was kept saying to me in preparation for this is, I just want to be good. I want this to not suck. And also that I want to memorize this stuff. I don't want to be just reading this and just be standing there rigid, you know. And she wasn't. She did a great job.
Yeah, and even when she became the human mirror ball, you know, and
spinning around
with all the bling bouncing off all the curtains and everything. She was delightful, just delightful.
Well, when she was coming up with the idea and trying to wrap her head around, well, how do I become like Rod Serling? Because she has this Mary Poppins type of character she already has, and how do you convert? It's a square peg in a round hole, basically. But I think when she was talking to Brad Henderson, that I think he may have been the one to give her the gypsy idea. It's like all of a sudden, click, it came together.
It was just amazing. I really would like to see her do that again.
Yeah.
That character again.
But she did a great job, and so she had with several people who were introduced, and I'm trying to think who came out first.
It was Mike Squires.
Mike Squires, yes.
Mike Squires came out, started off with the linking rings, and Mike Squires does this routine like a couple of times a week. I don't think he ever does a show that he doesn't do the rings in.
And are those really Bob... Bob White's rings?
Those are Bob's rings. That's a variation of Bob's routine. Mm-hmm. Bob taught him how to do the rings, and that's even Bob's bag from Bob's old jeans.
Wow.
That hold the rings. So sewn together by Bob's mom.
So that was something, again, going back to the classics of magic and being the linking rings that have been around for so long. And the next was another classic of magic that was presented then by, was it Alan Paoletti that came out next, I believe?
I believe that's true. And he did the Silken Egg. Yeah. And I always try to call that the Mark Wilson Silken Egg because he's the person I saw it the most.
Exactly.
Do it the most. I know it predates Mark.
Yeah.
But I remember Mark doing that on CNN with Larry King one time.
I think he did it on Magic Circus, I believe, also.
He did it on Magic Circus. Mm-hmm. But when I saw him do it on the news, I thought, well, that's just the most perfect routine in the world, you know? Mm-hmm. You think of it as a stage routine, but it's just something that can go in your pocket and be ready to perform impromptu at any time.
Yeah. So that was delightful.
Alan did a great job with that, too.
Yep. And then we had Lynetta Welch, who came out and did a great egg bag using her purse and pulling stuff. Go ahead.
The purse, I thought, you know, pulling all that crazy stuff out of her purse, looking for her room key, and saying that lock wouldn't open anyway.
Yeah.
So evidently there's been some issues with
her. I have had issues.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then she...
I've had to take the key back three times.
Oh,
I've even had the maintenance come out and work on my thing. Yeah.
Oh, well, then that was even funnier than I thought. And then she said, well, it must be stuck in the lining. So it sounded like she pulled the lining out of her purse, mm-hmm. and that was the egg bag. I mean, it was... What a clever, clever way of introducing a bag.
Right.
Why else would you have a bag?
Right.
You know, except it's
I guess if you were reaching in your pocket and as you pulled out your pocket inside out to say, hey, look, nothing in my pocket, and then the pocket falls on the floor. Now, there's an idea. You know? It's like, oh, well, I guess what can I do with this? Have to get it sewn back.
Okay, you magicians out there, you know, this is your idea. I can't wait to see you do it. So...
So she did a great job with that. And then we had Fabian, who had come out, and he was doing what? He didn't do the cups and balls. That was then Bronson came out with the cups and balls, didn't he? He did the zombie. He did the zombie ball.
Bronson did the zombie. And the Benson ball.
The Benson ball, that's what it was. Yes, he did the Benson ball.
So Bronson had two things. We forgot about his dad, Bruce. Bruce did...
Bruce was the first one out. Or later, he came second. Out. That's the second one out. And he did the Follow the Queen.
He did Follow the Queen, right. And again, one
Jumbo
of those
cards.
Memorized scripts. And then this guy, Scott... I think his name is Scott Wells, came out and just before the last act. So
to kill some time, and he did.
And he murdered.
He murdered. Did he kill it? There wasn't a dry set of pants left in the house.
And that was real fun, too. And but, you know, that poem you did.
Oh, on Rendicella.
Rendicella.
Yeah.
That brought down the house. I hope you realize, Scott, that brought down the house.
I'm on the stage, I'm getting a different reaction.
It's a hard... I noticed that last night when I was on that stage. You can't tell if people are liking what you're talking,
right,
what you're doing.
And
or
the
not.
Lights are bright.
And the lights are bright. You can't see them.
Right.
Oh, I was in the back row, and I could hear everybody laughing all the way through.
Wow.
And it just kept building and building and building. And I'm still trying to remember what Fabian did.
It was a
card stab. Yes. That's right.
We talk about Max Mellini, and we talk about other. You know, that was what each time. By the way, Trixie was talking about the history of what was going on and how we're going back, without going really into any great detail. That was an esoteric history lesson of magic, but it was still nonetheless interesting and true. But
and you know, and that while you and I knew the history of a lot of these things, I was watching again. I was sitting in the back. And so I was watching some of the younger magicians going like, oh, I didn't know that. Hmm. What? And, you know, after the show, they were saying, the zombie was invented in the bathroom? Why? Mm-hmm. And you know, so it too. Mm-hmm. Again, hats off to Trixie for doing all that research.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
He had a card stab in a sack.
Yes.
Sack.
And evidently, when he performed, there was one person who was... amazing, an amazing assistant, Mary, who was in the middle of the crowd. So, of course, he called on Mary again. So that was wonderful. So
that was great. And then finally rounding out the evening was Jay Zugai and Eli.
And, you know, I was thinking, you know, when he was throwing the Frisbee and the dog was catching it, my German Shepherd does that. Okay, but then my German Shepherd, it doesn't walk between my legs and jump through my arms or doing all this other stuff. So my German Shepherd can do one thing that Eli can do, and...
That's eat?
And eat, yes. Yeah. So, no, that was a great act. And it was perfect that it closed the show because, you know, there's no vaudeville rule. You never want to follow a kid act or a dog act.
Yeah. And that's another thing is that dog acts have won AGT in the past, so there is a love in America for dog acts. And some of the things he was doing, I was thinking, that would go past round one. I think he can make it through round one with an act like that.
Oh, easy, yeah.
Now, number two, I don't know so much, you know, but I thought that was good.
Mm-hmm. It was a very, very fun show and just a great final gala.
Right. And then tonight, we had, right after that, you were involved with filming this. Unfortunately, that Gay Blackstone could not make it. She was one of the people who all of us were looking forward to getting a chance to see.
I wasn't involved in filming it.
I'm sorry, I said filming. In editing. You were putting, didn't you say
something
about?
I'm hoping that we get to edit it. They're showing the raw footage right now.
Okay.
And I've offered that my amazing editor gets his hands on it.
Okay.
So,
but what I was going to say is that Gay didn't. Unfortunately, she couldn't come because she had some family issues that she had to deal with at the last minute and had to cancel. But knowing this, Bronson actually flew to Los Angeles and recorded a conversation with her in the parlor, which they're showing then right now, which was the conversation that he would have had she been there. And the idea was life after Harry Jr. In other words, after he died, what did she do with her life? That made her the success that she continued to be.
Yes, and you know, Gay Blackstone, she's just a treasure.
Class act. Yeah.
And you know, we both have had dinner with her and everything. Well, Bronson didn't know her very well.
Right.
And she gave him the whole Magic Castle experience, and he came back. I don't know if you heard him talking
about
how excited he was. You know, Bronson's grown up in magic,
yeah,
but he's never had the full AMA experience until he got to interview Gay. So that was so kind of her.
And as we're talking, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, that Dal Sanders is a recipient of the Award of Merit. Or what did you receive from that?
It was an Award of Merit in 2019.
From the Academy of Magical Arts. So I always like to say congratulations. I mean, it's great.
Thanks. Yeah, so I was just thrilled that Bronson got to experience that whole thing. You know, the thing that we're members. You and I are members. Mm-hmm. The first thing when we walk in, they always say,
welcome home.
Welcome home.
Yeah.
And so Bronson got to experience that, and he's young enough that he's going like, wow, this is so cool, this is so cool. The things that you and I take for granted, like, this is the way it should be.
Right.
He's
so overall, this convention, we have two more activities tomorrow morning. We have two more lectures. 10 o'clock is going to be Fabian. Moreno is going to be talking. I've forgotten who it is. It's in the morning, early first thing out of the shoot.
Bruce
Chadwick is going to be lecturing. Thank you. Or did he lecture this afternoon? I believe it's going to be... now I remember. It was Jay Zugai tomorrow morning first. And he's going to be, I believe, at 8:30. And then at 10 o'clock is going to be Fabian. And so I know that Jay's not going to get a lot of sleep since he closed the show tonight and then opening tomorrow. And he didn't get a lot of sleep, I know, last night. I say that because he and I are rooming together. So.
Well, he's not getting any sleep right now. He's over in the atrium hanging out with all the magicians.
So. Oh, okay. So he probably is not going to get much sleep tonight at all. Then, no. Overall, what do you think is this convention?
Fort Worth is always a good convention for me, mostly because it's close and I don't have to travel halfway across the state. And for those of you that don't live in Texas, Texas is a big state. Mm-hmm. To go to Austin, you have to plan a day, you know, and but Fort Worth is close to Dallas. So
what is it, 25 miles? How close together are
it? It's a 33-minute drive with the new express that's opened up. It used to be a 45-minute drive, but now it's 33.
Yeah.
So,
in the Petroplex.
Yes.
Okay.
The Petroplex?
Yeah, I've heard it called the Petroplex. You've never heard that?
No, I always hear it called the Metroplex.
No, Petroplex, because between the two of the petroleum industry.
Oh, okay. Well, cool.
There you go. So, overall, if you guys get a chance then to come to the Texas Association of Magicians, you should, because next year it's going to be in Houston, and the following year it will be in Austin. I'm sorry, it'll be in Dallas. And
you better get
Dallas,
that right.
Because Dallas is going to be the president, and he's sporting a badge for vice president right now that I'm looking at. And he is also going to help host the TOM's now voting member of FISM, so we'll be having the North American Championships that year as well, and that'll be 2024. But next year, 2023, in Houston,
that's
Texas.
Not all. It's also going to be a combined convention with the Society of American Magicians, and it's going to be celebrating the Dallas Magic Club's 100th anniversary, the oldest magic club
Whoopi.
In Texas.
This is, seriously, Whoopi, this is going to be just a over-the-top great convention. I mean, you got FISM, SAM, TAOM, all in one big weekend. Wow.
It'll
be Texas-sized.
It's going to be a Texas-sized, you know. You know how big the hair was in the television show Dallas?
Yeah.
That's how big the convention's going to be.
I like it. Texas hair. Well, Dal, thanks very much. Appreciate it. It's always good talking to you, my friend.
Good talking to you, my friend.
So with the Magic Word Podcast, that was Dal Sanders. This is Scotty out. We are now on day four, and day four is being combined with number three. Convention report because of it's a light day. That is, there are only a couple things going on. Specifically, there is just this first day was a partial day, and this last day, Memorial Day or Labor Day, is also a partial day. So I'm here with one of the lecturers and performers as well. He was someone who you might have heard a little bit earlier in the first report, but I thought we'd find out just a little bit more about his lecture because he's going to be the first one up this morning, and so I thought I'd capture him for just a couple of minutes. Please welcome Jay Zugai. Hey there, Jay. Good morning.
Hey, Scott. How are you doing? what would you like to know?
I would like to know how that you were saying earlier about how that you got booked for this. And often people say, how do I get onto a convention or give it a lecture?
I got booked for a lecture for Bronson Chadwick at his store. I had to travel to I guess it was Midland, Odessa area, where he has his Wonderland magic store. And I performed a lecture for him. And I guess he took a liking to me, and I showed him a couple of things he'd probably never seen. And he heard about my dog act, and I showed him a video of an elementary school show that I did. And he's a dog lover, and his wife, which they were engaged at the time, is an extremely dog lover. And they just thought it'd be a new twist to a magic convention.
So in a way, we're kind of in the right place at the right time, because typically and traditionally, it seems like that people will contact the convention organizers with their video or an email or something saying, just soliciting that I'd like to work here, but they actually reached out to you.
Exactly, exactly. And I was really fortunate, because I'm coming to the convention anyway, and they paid me somewhat, but they gave me a free room and registration, and actually I did it to get the exposure, and I think it played out really well.
And you did get good exposure, and it was all good, because you're a good performer, lecturer, and everything else, and a triple threat from the standpoint you did stage, close-up, and lecture.
I appreciate the compliment. I try to stay humble. I'm actually going to have they don't know it, but it's a TAOM AA meeting this morning. and the AA actually stands for Magic Anytime, Anywhere, where you don't need any special props.
Okay.
But I'm going to go into the bit where people ask me how I got so good at magic. And I told them, well, I joined the AA. Oh, no, I'm not an alcoholic. They just give me plenty of stage time.
Yes, they do. That's a good place to go, I guess. They need entertainment,
too. Yes, sure.
And they got donuts, right?
Most certainly. And lots of tea.
Yeah. your lecture is going to be mostly close-up this morning, or stand-up parlor? What kind of things
will
it be?
Actually, I'll tell you, I'm going to do a coin routine that requires a bit of skill. A lot of things. It's going to include the French drop. I'm going to show different ways to produce a coin where you can pull it out behind some kid's ear or whatever. And I'm going to show you a pencil through a bill routine that requires absolutely no gimmicks. It's just the way you specially fold a bill.
Impromptu type of method?
Impromptu. This is the anytime, anywhere. And I'm going to show you some things with rubber bands. Rubber bands are usually available everywhere. And I am going to do... I want to be really honest with you. Some of the biggest reactions I get from adults are... I put hand sanitizer in my hand, and I have four other people put hand sanitizers in their hands, and I tell them now that they have sanitized their hands, I will allow them to touch my squishies. And then I pull out basically two kind of octagon-shaped sponge balls, and I do a sponge ball routine where the climax is... one person has three in their hands, and the next person holding it, I ask them how many they have in their hand. They say two. I say, no, you have four in your hands. And when they open up their hands, they have the number four. And I tell you what, I get so many WTFs and OMGs from adults whenever I do this, and it's a killer routine. Sponge balls are classics, and it's amazing how many people are not doing it.
That's a good point, and it is a classic for a reason, because people really enjoy it. It's something that happens in their hand, and they could remember.
That's exactly right. If it happens in their hand, they're a lot more fascinated than if you made something disappear in your hands. But when it appears in their hands, that's when you get the OMGs.
And it's memorable, and they'll tell their friends about that, too.
Most certainly, and I can tell you this, in business, life, in magicians, if they like you, they'll tell two people. If they don't like you, they'll tell eight people.
That's a good point. You don't want that to spread.
That's exactly right. And my squishy routine is one I carry around with me all the time. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing how many people have not seen sponge balls.
Hmm. That's interesting. So one last thing, and I'll let you go, because I know you're preparing for things for the show here, or for your lecture. What's been a highlight? I mean, this seems like the Jay Zugai convention.
Thank you, Scott. Scott allowed me to roast him a little bit in my close-up act, and he was a good sport about it, and that was kind of a high point of mine. I did a comedy act, and it seems like it really went over well.
It did.
But I can tell you this, last night, the exposure that I got, because I went ahead and took this convention, Eli, my dog, is a phenomenal dog, and if you want to go to YouTube and type in elementary school dog tricks, I think you'll find me. Or just type in on YouTube Jay Zugai, Zugai, and it's pronounced the guy. I am the guy at the zoo, the zoo guy.
Good way to remember that, then, too. It has been a lot of fun, and everyone loves dogs, and especially because they you can tell
I'm
by...
I'm not so sure about you,
well,
Scott.
Well, except for me. But the... But Simon loves them. On America's Got Talent, and so they have won awards. I'm saying that they seem to be universally loved by most people, it was a good act in using the dog, and I think it brought people to their feet last night as you closed the show. It was a good bit.
Hey, thank you so much, Scott. And I can tell you this, if I can say this, I had a hell of a time here at this convention, and. And I guess I'll just see you next year.
We'll see you next year. All right. So with the Magic Word Podcast, that was Jay Zugai. Scotty out. We are now at breakfast, getting ready here before long for Jay Zugai's lecture. But before we do, there are a couple of guys who were in the contest, in one of which was a winner, and both were in the close-up category. Greg was in the stage in comedy. And Ray, were you in comedy, close-up, or just regular close-up, or is there a differentiation?
Close-up.
Okay. So I have with me Ray, my mind just went blank.
Adams.
Ray Adams, and Greg Youngs. Hey, guys, this is Ray's voice.
Hi, everybody.
And this is Greg's voice.
Good morning.
And so, first of all, because that it's important that we have more people who enter contests, what was it that inspired you, Ray, first of all, to get into the contest?
Bill Winters won the contest last year off stage, and he came and told me that I needed to go do it. And I thought he was crazy. So, and so I picked out the four tricks that I knew how to do, and had some of the other magicians, including Doug Gorman, help me out. And worked up a routine, and I am thrilled that I got to do it. It was scary at times, but a lot of fun. I'm glad I did it. And so you never know who your competition is going to be each year, though. And so, but it was a lot of fun. Loved it. And I love the fact that Greg won. I laughed my head off.
It was very funny. So many different visual gags, as well as just some things you had scripted that was great, certainly. So congratulations. Greg is one of the winners right there. In fact, he's got his medal with him. I believe you're wearing it right there. So, so Greg, tell me a little bit about your preparation for this. I know you've been in the past contestant.
Yeah, I've competed a couple times before in close-up. Never took it terribly seriously, just sort of did it more for fun. Mm-hmm. And then you do okay, and then you're mad at yourself for not preparing better, you know. Because this time I took it a little more seriously. With the apocalypse we just went through, I'd been wanting to get back out there and performing more, and then, you know, everything got...
Have you taken any improv classes or gone to comedy clubs and opened up mic night or anything like that?
Nope. I performed a good bit, but this kind of makes you get ready, and particularly on stage, because you can really embarrass yourself.
That is one of the things about a contest, or for that matter, about anything. If you have a show or something, that is, you have a deadline to get ready.
Exactly. So it forced me to try to put something worth applause together.
Were these natural things that came to you as far as some of your scripting or some of the ideas, or things that you've kind of had over a while and you put them all together?
Yeah, a couple of old things, and just started, like I said, focusing on it a couple of months ago, and I had a solid half hour that I had to trim down to 10 minutes.
Yeah.
So next year's already ready.
There you go. So you could be a double winner as well, or triple. You won last year then?
No.
Okay. Well, I
I have learned whenever I have competed, as you say, Ray, that you don't know who's going to be in the contest. And so once I get there, I found out there was some guy who was really funny, you know, who won. And so I thought, okay, well, next year I'm going to write something or do something that's going to be funny. Well, then I found out that that guy that year, someone who was really a finger flicker, you know, who, you know, had some great performing chops. And mine was, you know, I was not trying to pour in that. And so I was chasing that elusive thing instead of trying to be myself. And so the best advice I from that story is obviously do, as you said, Ray, you don't know who your competitors, and don't worry about that. Do you, you know?
Yeah. And it was, and again, going back to the tricks that I picked out, they were all good, but I knew that I could do them, although Doug helped me with a closer that I was really great. And then I turned the big cards that I was using in the closer upside down.
Yes.
So I went through the whole trick the backwards, but it did okay. That was a Ray Adams deal, because he always messes something up.
Yeah. Oh, that's funny. Well, my buzzer just went off for my waffle. I got to go. So, thank you guys very much. That's right. We'll see you. That's right. That's a real buzzer.
Wait on that one.
Okay. Thanks, Simon Cowell's over there. This is the Magic Word Podcast. That was Ray Adams and Greg Young's Scotty. For me, one of the highlights of every convention is the close-up aspect of it. I'm a close-up guy. I'm a card guy. And we had someone who is one of the top guys I had not known before until this convention, who was from France, lives in Luxembourg then now. That's Sylvain Jouzin. Hello, Sylvain.
Hello. Hello, Scott.
So it's a pleasure to meet you. It was a greater pleasure to watch you perform and work and completely blow me away with you. Now, your specialty, I guess, obviously, is the any card at any number, it's ACAN thing. So.
Yeah, this is. Thank you. First of all, thank you for these kind words. Yeah, this is a family of effects that I really like, and I take it as an intellectual challenge to find more versions, more versions, more versions. Mm-hmm. And this one, what the one I designed just to... for the special occasion, for the magic conventions. And this was actually the first time I showed it at a magic convention.
Well, it has one disprover after another one. So if you think it's this, it's that. If it's think it's this or whatever. I mean, so you eliminate so many side roads that there's nowhere else to go except the logical conclusion that this is a miracle.
This is magic. I think it goes back to Tamaris, the magical way.
Yes.
If it's not this, not this, not this, not this, this must be magic. So
we're on the same wavelength. Exactly right. Yep, that's what Juan would say. And so you're from France, but living in Luxembourg for the last 4 years, you said?
No, 15 years.
15 years. Okay.
I moved to Luxembourg in 2007.
Okay.
I originally come from the southwestern part of France, a small village near Bordeaux. Maybe you know the winery from Bordeaux. Mm-hmm. And but I've left France about 15 years ago. I moved to Luxembourg because I had, let's say, a real job, standard job, something more classical.
What did you do?
I was working for a Taiwanese company that were producing some tripods for photographers.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
I mean, the production plants were in China, obviously, and in Luxembourg that was more the financial aspect and sales aspect. And after 2 years... I got laid off, you say? I got laid off. So then I decided, well, I will take this as an opportunity to start my magic business. And since then, so since 2009, I've only been asking people to pick a card. And
doing magic full time.
I do magic full time.
Have you worked with Alexandria and Duvivier and in their place there in Paris?
No, not yet. In Paris, I've not been to their place. In Paris, I know Bernard Billis, a French card guy, who helped me for the book I wrote during the pandemic. He helped me to... he showed me a move at a Genie convention in 2016, and he agreed that I put it in the book. So if you do card tricks, this is the way to extract a card from the center of the deck while you put the card in the card case. It's really easy, really nice. And so we've kept in touch. So I go to Paris sometimes, not so often, because this is a city I don't like.
Oh, really? The rest of the world loves to go to Paris, but you stay away from it.
Yeah, I stay away from it. You know, I grew up in a small village not far from Bordeaux, 2,000 people, very small. In Luxembourg, I live in a small village, 8,000 people.
Yeah.
Paris is too chaotic, too dirty, too messy, and too expensive.
But you are away from other magicians. I mean, if you're in a larger city, you are surrounded by other people who are around there. And by the way, going back to Bernard Billis, I'm just not going to let that slide. I mean, it's amazing. That what a guy. I mean, there was something. I still do. I remember there was a card move in which that the card ends up underneath your watch, kind
watch,
of a diagonal
watch,
thing.
Watch
my watch, yeah. Plus other brilliant ideas. I remember him. He was one of the performers and lecturers at the 4F convention many years ago,
yes, okay.
And had met him. I haven't seen him in a long number of years. I'm glad to know that he's still around and alive and still performing. So
yes, he is. He is. In France, it's quite famous. It's the card guy in France because he was on a TV show for about, I think, 16 years.
Bebel is a card guy.
Bebel. But Bebel, yeah, exactly. But Bebel was not featured on TV as much as Bernard was.
Good point.
Bernard spent 4 years in the first TV show, then 16 in another one every month. So it's more mediatic than Bebel. But Bebel is also highly talented. Yeah. And you're right. When you live in big cities, it's good for your network. You have more connections.
Right.
You can hang out with magicians. When you live in Luxembourg, you have to go to France sometimes or to London sometimes.
Which leads to my obvious question about how did you get involved in magic in such a small city to begin with, where you may not have had a group of magicians around you as mentors?
No. So I started when I was 16, so it's not that young, it's not that late, somewhere in between. And in the village I grew up, there was nothing. So but I've always been interested. I always liked magic, the illusions, stuff like that. So the nearest magic shop was in Bordeaux. And my parents took me then once. And I let them buy for me my very first videotape at that time. And that was a Bernard Billis tape on the stripper deck. And I thought, wow, that's so great, but maybe we can do the same thing with standard deck. And then I kept visiting this store every once in a while. And then I moved to Paris. I stayed there for twice 6 months. Mm-hmm. And then there's a great, great shop. If you go to Paris, there's a great shop called Magic Dream.
I think I've been there, actually.
Yeah, it's nice, right?
Is it near the Louvre? Not too far from the Louvre?
Not too far from the Eiffel Tower. It's in the 15th
That's
district.
A different place I'm thinking of then. Okay.
And it's they had a big fire 2 or 3 years ago. Everything was burnt down, and now they rebuilt. And the apartment I was renting was in the same block.
Oh.
I didn't know that. And by Googling, there's a magic store going there. So I started visiting them, and I think the first thing I bought was the LNL DVD sets. I don't remember. There's a Daryl or Michael Lamar or Bill Malone, I guess.
Yeah.
And then, wow! And then buy one, get one free. Oh! Don't tell me that.
You haven't seen the Banachek Psy series, have you, from LNL?
I have them.
Well, that's me.
Okay.
It's on there.
Could you autograph them for me next time? Bring them. I have the books. I have the DVDs, of course.
Yeah, I'm Banachek's partner, so you'll see my name in the books. And also,
okay.
If you open up and read the foreword, it's dedicated to me.
All right. Good.
So as far as the ACAN premise goes, have you met or showed your version to David Berglas yet?
No.
Okay. You need to go to London and talk with him. He's in his 90s, so it's better hurry.
You know, there's only 1 hour flight from between Luxembourg and London.
There you go.
Because it's one of the two most financial cities in Europe.
Right.
So I fly there a lot. I have a very, very dear friend of mine who lives in London. I try to visit the session every year.
Sure.
Because it's a really nice convention.
I want to go to the session. That's usually in January, just before, I think, the Magi Fest we have here. The Andy Gladwin and Josh.
Yeah, that's it. The Vanishing Ink team, Andy, Josh, and Luke.
Love Luke.
And it's a really nice convention. Mm-hmm. Really nice, high class performer.
But you're not met David yet, but you're familiar obviously with all of his work and everything.
Yes, I have his book, and I had the chance to study his work, but not to meet in person. But if he's listening, hey David,
that's right.
Hurry up, I'm 39.
And you ought to make it a point there sometime. Well, anyhow, this has been great. And how about your experience at this convention? Have you? And how did Bronson find you? I guess there are two different questions. First of all, how did Bronson find you?
I found him.
Oh, you contacted him?
Yeah.
Okay.
I found him because it's good to develop magician fullers, but it's better if you can show it in real.
Sure.
And I said, okay, there must be a convention somewhere in the U.S. And, Texas, the only place I know from Texas was Beaumont, so there must be something nice.
Okay.
And I said, I just introduced myself to him. And he said, oh, Luxembourg. What that? Okay.
You're in. Okay. So my other question was, how have you been enjoying this as far as, I assume it's your first trip to Texas, and how have you enjoyed the Texas Association of Magicians convention?
Yeah, it was really nice. It's something I recommend if you have a chance to come here.
Make new friends, and it's been fun.
Make new friends, that's the point of all the conventions, and some good lectures, some good acts. Mm-hmm. And some interesting people. I mean, that's the most important thing. For network or just to have interesting chats. And it's also a nice city. I didn't know Fort Worth, but I myself didn't rent a car, but you just take the bus, and in 30 minutes you're in the stockyards. Right. All the touristic stuff. It's right. Really, really nice. Yeah, really right. Nice. I mean, right. Going to a rodeo show and stuff like that, something you don't see in Luxembourg.
Did you come early? Or are you planning on staying late? Or?
Both.
Okay.
Both.
Kind of experience all of Texas life.
Exactly. I came two or three days before the start of the convention to visit the stockyards and stuff like this. And now we'll stay three more weeks.
Okay.
Thanks a lot.
So I've really enjoyed talking with you and meeting you. It's one of those things in which, again, that's what this is about, of making new friends as we have, and contacts so we can help each other in the future as things go along.
I would love to.
We'll keep in contact.
Of course.
So for the Magic Word Podcast. That was Sylvain Jouzin. This is Scotty out. Thanks, Sylvain.
That's it.
Beginning of the convention report, we were talking with President Bronson Chadwick, as we had great expectations in getting into the convention, and a lot of things that were going on, a lot of moving parts. Well, now the parts have settled, and so has Bronson, a little bit, or at least a few days, maybe a week from now you might settle down. Here's Bronson Chadwick, president of the 2022 Texas Association of Magicians Convention. Hey, Bronson, good morning.
Good morning. I'm here. I'm alive.
So things are starting to settle now that we're in the final day and just the final hour or two.
Yes, that's correct. Monday morning's always layover day for TAOM attendees, so we have two lectures while people wait for their flights, checking out of the hotel and whatnot. It's been a great convention. We've had a lot of fun, a lot of surprises, planned and unplanned, but that's okay. It all worked out. I would count this as a success. If I were to give this a grade, I would give it a healthy about a 95.
Is that out of 1,000, or are we talking about 100?
out of 100, yeah, out of 100. Yeah.
And so as far as some of the highlights, it's hard to choose when they're all your babies, but did you have been handpicking everything that's been happening and all the routines and things that happened, and some things may have turned out to be even better than what you expected, and what I mean by that is, like, for example, that Gay Blackstone unfortunately couldn't come, but you actually flew out to L.A., did a chat with her, and so that was a complete surprise to everybody to have a wonderful conversation with her that was broadcast and we watched late last evening. Things like that, perhaps, that you may not have, I mean, you had certainly turned lemons into lemonade with that kind of a thing. Anything that kind of sticks out to you?
I particularly enjoyed our Saturday evening show. That show was it always felt to me like a coin toss when we were planning it, and the closer we got to the show and to the convention, the more it started to make sense that it was going to work. And then when I saw Jeanette Enders do what she was doing, I got the goosebumps just a little bit. It was delightful. She was a hidden gem. And, of course, Liz Sanders always a hit. And all the other guys, a few of them are local guys, and they were excellent. I mean, just top-notch quality acts. I'll be sending letters of recommendation to quite a few different convention planners for these people. I enjoyed our contests quite a lot. Now, the contests were big. They were very big. And
with cash awards, too.
With big cash awards. I did not know the TAOM was awarding cash awards as well, on top of the ones that our local club was doing. I had no idea. So it ended up being an excellent contest with good winners. I'm very pleased at how many people stepped up to do the contest.
I think by virtue of numbers alone, I mean, there are 19 contestants, is that right, between stage and close-up?
something like that.
We actually, I believe, had one fellow register at the last second, so that means 20.
Okay, so we had 20 people, which is, I would say, unprecedented, but certainly more than is normal. And so I think you had told me earlier this weekend that you had a goal, really, yes. And really an intent of trying to solicit more registrants. There's more contestants.
That's correct. TAOM and a few other large organizations quit paying close attention to contests. And when you go to an event like FISM and you hear people say things like, well, why isn't America stepping up? We don't see a whole lot of acts coming in from America. It starts with the smaller conventions like TAOM. If you don't have people doing those contests, there's no contest circuit. Therefore, the road to the top is blocked. You can try to go straight to FISM if you want, but we need to get people interested in challenging each other. My motto for a convention is camaraderie and competition. Those two things together bring about a really excellent talent pool for the future.
That's a very good point. And also, speaking of the competition, next year will be in Houston, but the following year is going to be a combined convention with the SAM and the TAOM in Dallas, in which Dallas is going to be celebrating their 100th anniversary of their organization, I guess, being in Dallas. And they're going to be in the North American Championships for FISM.
That's correct. Yeah, that's correct. I would encourage listeners, don't make the mistake of trying to choose between if you're going to the 2024 convention or the 2023 Houston convention. You need to do both, especially if you're competing. You want to compete at 23 to prime yourself for 24 to be ready for 25.
Good point. Yeah, because 25 is going to be in Rimini. We went there in Italy before. It was going to be in San Marino. I believe it is. No, it's not right. It's in Turin, Italy. That's where it's going to be.
Torino.
Yes, right. I'll get it eventually. Over there. It's in Italy coming up in it's right, 25. It is still early over here. Well, it has been fun and fine. And I thought that your mom at registration and your dad and behind the scenes, plus in front of the scenes, doing a lecture and performing and everything. I mean, it was really a family affair kind of a thing, you know.
It really is. A magic club is always composed of different families that kind of make up the backbone of the club. And so I'm very, very happy with the help of my family, the help of my wife, Emily, and then all the members of our club that did things that you never saw.
Right. Behind the scenes, you say, kind of a duck paddling under the water.
Yes,
kind of.
That's correct. That's correct. They're back there.
That's right. Well, good job. Thank you very much, Bronson, for taking the time that led up to making this a success that it was. So appreciate your work.
Thank you so much.
Welcome. So for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Bronson Chadwick. And from Fort Worth, Texas, I think that's going to be a wrap for this year. And we'll see you next year in Houston at the Texas Association of Magicians. Scotty out.